morning, humanity. This is Marvell, host of the One Gone Wide Words of Wisdom show, welcoming you on this Monday morning to another delve into what we can do to become stronger as people and stronger as a community. It is at this time that we usually, wait a minute, this day is Monday, so we don't usually have the open, well, we have an open forum generally, but we have specifically a day where you can call in on any issue and we can do some breakdowns, some exposés about what those issues might mean to our community or mean to our humanity, and then proceed. However, this morning it occurred to me that one very vital issue that exists in certain, I'll say in our community specifically, I say generally in most communities and most cultures, it probably exists, but in our culture, in our community, there's something that exists that I think we deserve to look into, and that is belief. And belief, I didn't define it through the Webster or the Google or anything like that. If someone wants to do that and come with some more technical, it's just belief to me is a simple demonstration of a strong feeling that something is going to occur. And in that strong feeling, there's a commitment to the individual who feels it to attempt to assure that it does. And moreover, that individual may embed it in their heart and their spirit so they carry that message. Every time the subject comes up, they carry the message of that strong conviction of it finally or eventually happening. So that's sort of my overview of what belief is. And in saying that, I'm seeing that that might be a major struggle for our people in this country. So with that said, let me give you an example. In California, there is a movement that has been well-researched, well-presented, well-documented, and well-received by administration to award reparations to descendants of slaves before 1890. And when I asked people, because when I heard about it and I saw that there was a movement, I attended as many of the conferences that they have. They had a final conference here back in August. I mean, no, it was before. It was like July. And it was a very powerful gathering. Had a lot of little coverage, had a lot of momentum built up to an 1,100-page document that makes it clear that any opposition to the reparations request doesn't make sense, because there's an argument for anything you might say that would awarding reparations to descendants of slaves before 1890. And that document exists now, 1,100-page document. Now, when they left here for the last conference, I began to probe to see what I could do to help build their consciousness about it. And what I heard was things like, I asked the question, hey, what you know, you heard about reparations? Yeah, I heard something about it. Say, okay, well, you for it? Yeah, well, I'm for it if they do it. You know, I don't think they're going to do it, though. And I'll say, well, why not? Why don't you think they do it? They're going to do it. Well, you know how it is, man. They always. And so there's this apprehension that opposes a belief to something that's proven. It's been proven that the deserving of this is unquestionable. It's been proven. It's been it's going away to legislation. It's a document that for whatever the process thereafter, everything is official. However, when you ask about it, there's this apprehension, and apprehension is to me the opposite of belief. So the hard sell now is persuading my people who qualify, or even people who don't qualify, but have no people who qualify, or if you don't qualify, you still will be the beneficiary. If you are a black person in California, you will still be, by proxy, a beneficiary of anything awarded to your culture, but nobody believes it. Let me stop that. I'm not going to say nobody. That's a broad statement. Most that I talk to don't believe it, and then a lot of people are not getting the information so that they can begin to move towards belief in this as a fact and the truth. So that's just one incident that makes it clear to me that belief is a existing concern with our people believing in something.
Okay.
Believing in something. So I'd like to open the floor for a discussion about the details that lead to a belief. I think there's a step by step. I think it's important to analyze what those steps are to arrive at a belief in something, because that seems to be one of the challenges that exists in my eyesight. See, my eyesight is not 20/20. However, my spirit and the mind's eye stirs me up to bring these things out so that if they have any weight or merit to what we're attempting to do, then we can work through it and get to better approaches towards solutions.
Marvell, the only way that those types of things can be accomplished is that you have competent leadership. When no matter what culture, if you have competent leadership, things can be accomplished. Obstacles can be successfully moved to the side. When it comes to a belief system and leadership, if I don't have a quote focal point, something that I can actually draw from, so that a human being can draw from or use as a reference point, then I'm like a leaf in the wind. What a belief system does is that it attempts to anchor that particular person. Anchor meaning steadfastness. They're capable of weathering storms. So, and storms can be financial, personal, emotional, what have you, business-wise. So, again, I believe that if you have decent leadership, and that will help in their beliefs that success is imminent, that success can be had. And so you, without a, I wouldn't say charismatic, but I'd say a leadership that is substantiated and grounded in faith, number one, then you have some semblance of success. Without that, and without a leader or leaders, you have people aimlessly walking around with no focus, no thought pattern, no willingness. And reparations, you have to be willing to speak up for those types of monies, those types of circumstances. And I have to agree with you. I don't hear, outside of you, I don't hear a sound about reparations, even from the government.
Yes. So foundation for belief in something that is deserved. It saddens me to have to make that statement, that there's a lack of clear understanding to me. That's what is appearing to me. A lack of understanding that this is not something that we're begging for, or something that we're hoping for, something that we're looking for someone to be generous about. It's what we deserve. What we deserve. That is the premise here. And
well, let me back you up here on deserve, because the word, when you're saying the word deserve, I'm looking at the word earned. Our culture,
earned,
just like the indigenous culture when before the white man came to this country, our cultures have earned the right, the amount, the concept. Now, do we have the ability at this moment to back those things up? When I say the ability, I'm not talking about educationally. No, I'm just talking about, do we have enough people such as yourself and others who are speaking up? We have earned every nickel and continuously earned through all types of circumstances. And it's no point to go through the litany of obstacles in the in black folks' existence in America. So, no, this is the only thing I just wanted to make comment. We've earned everything that we've gotten. Good and bad. We've earned it. The good, as far as reparations are concerned, it just merely takes someone able to garnish communication from other sources on the same issue. Nobody really knows this, but the Japanese culture has been in favor of reparations for our people. They've not publicly made that clear, but they have put it in writing that they, too, agree that reparations are due. But you don't hear nobody else. You won't hear anybody else. And that's the big hope. The system, the culture, the government, all of them wants you to think that if we stay quiet, it, too, will blow over. No, no, keep preaching. No, no, keep talking about it. Keep enlightening folks. That's the name of this particular segment. Keep enlightening. And I'll stop at this moment.
Well, so Joe, that earned statement is very pointed. Deserve is strong, but yet earn is the justification for the desserts, right? I wrote a piece, it's called Just Us, J-U-S-T-U-S, excuse me. And it goes like this. A very real effort is now going forth to cast the appropriate light upon people who've experienced being constantly left to be finally to the right. For 400 years and counting, they patiently awaited their turn for the respect, recognition, and compensation that they worked so diligently to earn. The only issue that remains outstanding is what and when they should be paid. As for the matter of if they deserve it or not, that decision has already been made. So earning or earned and deserved are they not only live on the same street, but they live in the same house and sleep in bunk beds in the same room. We've earned it, so we deserve it. And not to believe it is sort of like it identifies that shortcoming. And identifies that shortcoming. And moreover, I understand why not really being riveted in belief about a lot of things exists. Because seemingly to me that having great anticipation or even going past anticipation into expectation of something and it not happening has been a commonplace experience. So it's like, why volunteer for that setup? Okay, if it happened, because this is what I heard a couple guys say. Well, if it happens, cool, I accept it, you know, but I ain't looking for them to do it. And so I propose to walk around with a contract for those who are on the fence, those that say, oh, I'll accept it if they give it to me. But then there are some people who say they ain't going to do it. And so I propose to have a contract that says, okay, well, look, if and when they award it, sign your name saying that your award will go to me, Marvell Wilson. How that sound? And they look at me like I'm crazy, but they don't know I'm looking at them the same way. It's like, what you mean? It ain't, how do you justify just shooting down the prospect of getting what you've earned? Or what you deserve? How do you just wildly, casually just, no, they ain't gonna do that. That ain't gonna happen. So,
well, wait. Let me help here at this point. To be able to recognize, one has to be confident within self. To what we were talking about a couple of weeks ago about the individual. If the individual doesn't have the confidence to believe in themselves, then anything outside is unbelievable also. And we go to our history. Yes, there are lies. So there are lies told about us today. As a matter of fact, an hour ago. But again, it's the same lie. So if I start believing, in which a lot of our culture has, believing the government's lies that what I consider a lie would be, let's take the reparations issue. The lie is, yes, there's $2 for Joe Jones, but Joe Jones has to be able to come and is here. Joe Jones has to be able to come up and make some comment about it and talk about it. And let me know that he's interested. And we've lost confidence in pushing self forward. That's all. That can be rebuilt.
I'm trying to follow.
Reparations is an issue that is constantly evolving. We stop at a certain point. Our culture will stop. Because they don't have the confidence to move forward in the aspect of reparations. You got to constantly evolve and move forward with the language so that you can keep up, so that you can make your point known. We don't keep up with that current type stuff, and so it's hard to believe. It's very hard to believe. I've got to get off and take care of some business at this moment. All right, thank you.
Okay. All right. So what he just described to me is a tendency to. With whom am I speaking? What he just described to me is a tendency to do what I learned a little way back in a fellowship I attended. I learned how to practice principles, and moreover, principle over personality. And it's this little saying that says, don't quit 5 minutes before the miracle. And that's what I'm describing. Even with a semblance of belief, there's a tendency to only go to the line and don't cross the line. Don't go the full distance. We get to run the race and get all the way to the finish line and teeter out. And there's a lot of question marks about a behavior like that, because all the investment of time, energy, and want for something to happen, to fall short of it, is kind of saddens me to hear that there's a tendency that does that. Well, Joe constantly talks about the individual, importance of the individual to strengthen their inner self-awareness and self-confidence that things will happen for them. And they do. We have people who do some things individually. They have the discipline to hone their craft or to train their body to do things that once they do them, they're difficult to duplicate because the excellence is so outstanding. It's like, wow. We have people who put themselves in the annals of greatness, untouchable. You'll never see another one like it. So individually, yes. Put your mind, that old saying about put your mind to it and be committed to it and quite frankly, trust God, whatever God it is that you appreciate, trust that God will give you the strength and the energy to succeed in whatever it is. So it's sort of a paradox to me that individually we thrive, yet collectively we still are apprehensive and have this question mark about whether or not belief is something to invest in. Now, leadership proposition that Joe proposed, it has a history too. And that is, we've had passionate, eloquent, intelligent, spirited leaders who spoke to us and moved us, stirred our spirits, and attracted us to them to make movements happen and to move things from one position to the next. However, they were assassinated. And I'm going to say that might be a lingering in the mind of a potential leader before he decides to leave. That lingering might be, well, I have the charisma that Joe spoke about. I have the direction. I have the spirit. I have the know-how to move my people to another consciousness. But would it be potentially of my life? And if so, am I willing to give that up? And so if that's the question, one of the answers could likely be, well, I'm not seeing how the benefit of me sacrificing myself would move the needle that much, because the ones, my predecessors who were assassinated and sacrificed their life, we're still kind of swimming in the same shallow pool. We ain't went into the deep yet. We still let down in the 3 feet, standing up in the water, and we haven't delved into the 6 to 9 and the 12-foot waters and start swimming as a people. So I'm looking at it from the perspective of the leadership that we are talking about exists in personalities that are within our fold. However, it might be important to groom more leaders while we have a leader. And so the leadership's responsibility would not only be to keep the focus, but also to be focusing on grooming leadership so that no one person can be removed and thwart the whole movement. Because, quite frankly, that's been one of the methods employed. Is okay when I remember that movie Malcolm X, Spike Lee's movie with Denzel Washington, where they beat the brother up, took him to jail unlawfully. They committed a felony on the man, just beat him up and had him in the jail and wouldn't take him to the hospital. And Malcolm X rallied the Brotherhood to march on the police station and just, you know, diplomatically propose that we're here to get our brother to the hospital. That's all. Get him to the hospital. And so when they saw the numbers and saw the strength and saw the reason, they decided to transport the man to the hospital. And the police captain was standing next to Malcolm X when he raised his finger and all the men came to attention and were attentive to him. All these men, I'm talking about, these were devoted men. They were devoted to the principle of manhood and righteousness. And he saw that man raise his finger. They paid attention, and he pointed to the direction, and they stepped off and started marching, and that man said, that's too much power for one man to have. Too much power for one man to have. That's what he said. Translation, too much power for a black man to have. So in the recesses of a leader's mind could likely linger that consideration, that if I lead and we develop a movement that is powerful and recognizable and has momentum, would they kill me to stop the movement? When I say they, I don't even know who particularly they are, right? But I know what they represent. They represent the method of control to a resource that mans the NBA, the NFL, the record industry, the service industry, these people. So would that merit or would that urge a consideration to remove one from that position so that they can continue the division that builds empires? As long as we're divided, we're building other people's empires. As long as we're divided, we're building other people's empires. I don't know if I'm being heard when I say that. I don't know if I'm being, if that's being embodied or not. I'm not, I may be heard, but I'm wondering if that's being embodied. That as long as we're consumers, don't manufacture, don't distribute, and don't have holdings that are recognizable in commerce in this country, as long as that exists, we're manipulable. And quite frankly, if you want to build an empire and you had a targeted market, we're the target. If you come from another country and you have goods and services that you want to target to a group of people, we're the target. So why would consciousness and a leader who's promoting consciousness, why wouldn't that be a course of action to be considered, removing that leader from the fold? Why wouldn't that be a contemplation if you still want to maintain the control over the number one consumer? So that's something to consider when we talk about leadership. Yet I still propose that leadership is something that can be groomed into every individual. We don't need one person to call the shots and to make the plans and rally the people and speak into the people's spirits of movement. We don't need that. Because quite frankly, that hasn't worked well for us. What we would do well to consider is having leadership a subject matter to discuss, whereas each individual can realize that in their world they should be a leader. Because my concept of the world is, when we say the world, we're talking about the vastness of the planet. But then there's a microcosm. And that microcosm could be our world, which is a culture, our world, those things and principles and those methods that we agree to practice within our world. And then we have your or my world. My world has principles and methods that I practice within my world and my household. Right, so somebody had talked about a couple of weeks ago, we talked about kings and queens, calling each other kings and queens, and I controversially introduced that maybe we're talking about of royal blood, but everybody can't be a king and everybody can't be a queen, at least not starting off. You might work yourself to queenhood and kinghood. But everybody's just not, you know, just not king material. Everybody is not. So I guess, we're a very unique and mystical people. And to fail to recognize that or to scoff it off, or even to let someone think, urge you to think, that there's something wrong with that and that you should adjust your frequency to what somebody else is doing, which has been a successful operation that has gotten that. It's like, I remember, you know, well, even now, you know, it's getting better as far as like natural hair, but all the women used to want to wear, had their hair straightened. Hey, I'll tell you what, when I was back in the 60s, I had my hair straightened. I used to wear what they call a continental pump, right? And it was like a Jackie Wilson style. I don't know if you guys know who Jackie Wilson is, but Jackie Wilson was the predecessor to Elvis Presley. So think about that. And had my hair done like that. So, you know, to look Puerto Rican or something, to look some other than a black man was the goal. And so that means that something about me being who I am that made me not feel comfortable as if I, you know, went with the trend of what somebody else looked like or what somebody else was doing in order to feel like I was a part of this, the culture of this country, because the culture of this country is something that looms over every culture too, because we have a government that that represents and structures a certain amount of overview and creates a culture of thought and behavior that we have to adhere to, because they have the gun and they have the power of money. So grooming leadership to me sounds like the most sensible course of action. As we talk to our young people, don't tell them that they're leaders, because they're not. But tell them their importance to recognize their leadership qualities early. So that's what we do when we go into the school system, is we're planting and watering the seeds of critical thinking, which is kind of, you know, kind of shallow now in our school systems. We're really kind of falling off with that. Some of the classes that we used to take when I was younger urged you to be critical in your thinking. Now it's just kind of cookie cutter. And a lot of kids, as a result, they don't have an interest in learning certain things because they're not pertinent to technology. But at the same time, they're losing their spiritual connection, their social connection, and their critical thinking tendencies. And I'm stating these things. I could be wrong. That's just my observation, that these are the things that are being sacrificed as a result of this system that we're living in, and what's grooming our children. So grooming leadership in our individual, in the child as an individual, would be a hopeful that they would then in turn be able to define what they could contribute to the whole and not just follow someone because they're charismatic or they have the loudest voice, or, you know, because we watch these kids and we see that they'll look at the popular one, or they'll look at the one that has this little leverage with them before they respond to something, because they want to see if it meets their approval first. And so that's a lot of power for a young man or a young lady to have in a setting like that, in a peer group setting. So what we understand is that that's the one that we groom, to groom them in a way that allow them to have an ability to recognize their leadership. And so what we're doing is actually urging people to, our young people, and so hopefully our adult population, urging a little bit more analysis of situations that exist, behaviors that exist, trends that exist, and considering another decision. Because right now, the youth that we work with, we're going into junior high school and the high schools. We have a couple who are riveted in the idea of their pants hanging God awfully low for men, to me. Yet, for the most part, when they come in to us, they have their pants pulled up. And I think that's sort of like a tribute of respect. And the more that they pay tribute to that, the less likely that it would make sense for them to keep going back to something that they're not able to explain in the first place. But this thing about, I mean, I'm looking at it from the overview of what is it that allows one to believe that that their pants should be under the buttocks when they walk down the street. That's a belief. We started talking about a belief. Well, that's a demonstration of a belief. It might not be a favorable one, but it's a demonstration of a belief that's being practiced. And what stirs and what continues to make that a belief, that's so what I do when I do address one young man about it, I'd go like this. I would say, hey, man, do me a favor and help me understand the strategy. Because let me let you know, I got your back. You know, I'm going to support you with anything that makes sense. So help me make sense or help me understand why it makes sense for you to be walking down the street and every five steps you're pulling up your pants. And then if you have to run, the game is over. Can slew foot. Doctors just said that it's starting to affect the hip development, having to walk this way, this particular way, to keep the pant from not falling to the to the knees, and it's the strategy does not really make sense to me. So I'm asking you for me to represent and to be able to lobby and advocate for you and what you're doing. Help me understand what the strategy is. And a lot of times, if I have a candid conversation, they say, first they lie, they say, well, I left my belt at home. I said, no, man, don't lie to me, man. No, we can't get nowhere if you're lying. You know you ain't left the belt. You know, because some of them got belts. They call this up being smart. They got the belt to lock it below the buttocks so that they won't keep sliding down. So let's get beyond the belt part. Tell me why you're doing it in the strategy. What are the advantages? And they can't do it. So here goes my adage that I tell young people all the time. Okay, so if somebody asks you why you're doing it and you can't tell them, then maybe it's time for you to reconsider what you're doing. And so that everything that was posed and all the conversation that was shared was a setup to get to that, because that is sound reasoning and stirs up, hopefully, critical thinking on the part of the person that you're talking to. Not the, oh, man, what the hell wrong with y'all? God, you know, it's because there's a belief. And it's been there since the 80s. There's a belief that there's some strategy here. So let's find out if they know the strategy. If they don't know the strategy, then maybe they'll reconsider. Because the bottom line is, that is a belief. Pure and simple and clear to me. That is a belief system that exists. And if, for the young ladies, there seems to be a belief system. I mean, they're wearing these lashes, and they're getting younger and younger. I went to an event the other day, and they had a dance. They had some dance troops of some Hawaiian girls they had skirts on, long skirts on, and they had, you know, they covered stuff, and they had the little flower, little hand things with the little flowers on, and they were doing the little dance. It was kind of, you know, it was kind of soothing, and, you know, artistic and poetic, but it was not provocative in any way. Then they had the little young black girls come up, and they doing the little Beyonce hip jerk and, you know, doing a, wait a minute, hold on, man, really? I kind of had to, like, I had a booth there selling stuff, and it was a nice affair. Don't get me wrong. It was a beautiful affair. It's just that this one little key element that keeps jumping out at me is the belief now in the young ladies that they need to be provocative sexually in order to be valuable. So again, we have the belief that the eyelashes are going to enhance that. We have the belief that the short skirt is going to enhance that. We got the belief that your bottom has to be contoured, like, you know, sculpted in order for that to occur for you. And that's clearly a belief system that's being practiced. And it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate because it solicits only, you know, certain, you know, limited reactions to that behavior. It does not speak to one's acumen, intelligence, or whatever field that they may have discovered that they have to offer in artistic or creative realm. It doesn't speak to that. It just speaks to, look at me, ain't I jazzy? Hey, look at me. You can't not look at me, can you? So these are the beliefs, especially with our young people. These are the existing, visible. So belief is not something that's a stretch for us. Belief in cause is a stretch. Belief in because is an E. Because I want you to look at me. But cause, I want you to respect me. I want you to invest in me. I want you to recognize I have something other than my visible appearance. That's kind of a set-aside issue in the belief structure. So, again, I'll revisit. What are the particulars about belief that we deserve to give more attention to? Belief in progress. Belief in equity, belief in our ability, what I do, because the ability thing, that really baffles me. It really, you know, it really troubles me, because when you talk about ability, there's no question about ability. The folding bed created by a black man, his name is L.C. Bailey. Stainless steel pads, did you know that? Stainless steel pads were created by a black man, his name was Alfred Benjamin. Disposable syringe, because I remember they used to have these, like, stainless steel, like, really, really, like, surgical syringes that they used to use to do injections. And a black man named Phil Brooks made it so that was not necessary anymore. All those expensive and intricate apparatuses used for injection, he made that so that it wasn't necessary anymore. His name was Phil Brooks. Pencil sharpener. How bad do we need pencil sharpener? Well, I guess now, since pencils are not that much used in school, everybody is touching words instead of writing them. But up until the 80s, who could not do well with having a pencil sharpener? Pressure cooker. Pencil sharpener was by John L. Love. Pressure cooker by Maurice W. Lee. Pressure cooker. How genius is that? I was in a relationship with a young lady from the South, and she liked, and I'm gonna just be candid with you. I like them too. Matter of fact, let me plug that we're such a creative, innovative people that we make hog guts taste good. Okay, so well, anyway, she used to, because when she made the chitterlings, she made them in a pressure cooker, and it took only, you know, a portion of the time it would take to cook them on the stove in a pot. A pressure cooker, that is a very innovative creation by a black man. Come on, really? W.A. Lavalette. W.A. Lavalette invented the printing press. The bicycle frame made by Isaac R. Johnson. The bicycle frame. Oh, yeah, here's one. Super Soaker. I remember that was a fun. I mean, okay, we got to have gunplay. Let's have it with water, right? You know, ain't no games that you play now with water. Everything is lifelike. Blowing people's heads off and all that stuff, and drawing blood and killing. You know, you are judged by to win by how many people you killed. But the Super Soaker was an apparatus, the gun-like apparatus that just dispensed water to have fun with. This was created by Lonnie Johnson. The ironing board, come on. Sarah Boone. The automatic fishing reel. My buddy's going to love to hear this. The automatic fishing reel was invented by a brother named George Cook. The dustpan. L.P. Ray. The baby buggy. W.H. Richardson. Oh, no. Clothes dryer? G.T. Sampson, you made the clothes dryer? You created that prototype for a clothes dryer? Wow. So I can go on and on.
I know you
so
could.
So ability... I have, too, haven't I?
Yes. Hey, and so I want to thank you for that, because that wraps into the topic for today. And so it was, you know, for the government to give all this money for these wars that are off the soil of America and put millions and billions of dollars into these countries, but yet will not give reparations to the African-born Americans. I have a problem with that. And for you to read out all of the inventions, all of the great ideas that black people have come up with for this country and still not be recognized. It should be every other day on the news, instead of all this bad news, they should be honoring these folks for all the inventions. They should have a segment on there saying, hey, today on Black America, we have such and such, the inventor of whoop-de-whoop. And we don't have that, so our kids don't hear that, right? And all our kids hear is how somebody's knocking down his brother, or the rap music calling our girls bees, and all of the just the negative stuff that could come out of one's mouth
that's what they're hearing. And so with you doing what you're doing, Brother Marvell, we appreciate that. We appreciate you highlighting these various individuals who have put down a demo to show that black people were creative, still is creative, and we are still not being recognized for our creativity. We're going to take a break right now. It is the Wise Words with One Gone Show on Blog Talk Radio. I had to pay to get on this station. I had to pay to get on this station, and I'm going to see why today, out of all days, I have to pay to get on this station when I'm One Gone. And this is the Wise Words with One Gone Show.
Hooked on Fishing and Not on Violence presents You Healing Circle every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m.
You Healing Together.
2251 Florin Road, Sacramento, California. Inside of Room 67, our Youth Healing Circle is a forum where we dive into discussions about drugs, bullying, school, and life skills. We provide a safe space and inform our youth
that sometimes it is okay to not be okay.
During our Youth Healing Circle, our youth may hear from other youth as well as experienced adults how to problem solve and navigate unforeseen complexities that we all run into in life. 2251 Florin Road, Sacramento, California. That's Room 67 every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. For more information, text or call 916-889-0105. Let's heal together. Peace and blessings, King. Hooked on Fishing and Not on Violence presents
the Men's Healing Circle.
Brothers healing together.
Brothers healing together.
Join us every Wednesday night from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. 2251 Florin Road, Sacramento, California, inside the Obama Room. The Men's Healing Circle is a place where men uplift, encourage, and inspire each other to be better through personal testimony, dialogue, self-reflection, self-improvement, and positive affirmation. Again, that's 2251 Florin Road, Sacramento, California, in the Obama Room. Come out and pledge to greatness with your fellow brother.
Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3. What's up with it? Attention sack artists. You trying to get your music played? R&B, jazz, hip-hop, and comedy. Spoken word as well. Send your MP3 tracks to DJ1Gone at yahoo.com. That's DJONEGONE at yahoo.com. Make sure you give a call to 347-205-9722 or log on to blogtalkradio.com.
And we're back. And so this Thursday, I'm going to need y'all to spread the word. We have another night of skating. It's called Healing Why Willing at the King Skate Country, 10404 Franklin Boulevard, 95758, from 6:30 to 8:30. We'll have all of our family members come out and enjoy skating. Now, the last time we did it, we had not even a handful of people show up. They had a couple of other organizations doing some other things. And so what I know about us as black people, we don't have nothing going on week to week to week to week. But then when we do have something going on, everybody got something going on. So we need to get a calendar together in the black community to find out who's doing what, when they're doing it, and let's support them so they can support us. Oh, you didn't hear me. I said, let's support them so they can support us. It is the Wise Words of One Gone Show on Blog Talk Radio. The call-in number is 515-605-9861. That's 515-605-9861. Now, if you have a Metro, you might not be able to get in. So we're trying to find out why the network won't let us in so we can talk to a friend. Without further ado, I have Brother Marvell Wilson for you. Marvell?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm sort of like marinating in the healing aspect of what is being proposed by Hooked on Fishing, by the Healing Circle, sponsored by you, by the Youth Healing Circle, sponsored by you, by the Healing While Wheeling, sponsored by you, and that healing adage is really striking me, because we're a wounded people, and healing, the best thing we can work to do is, say, I think it's a challenge for a lot of people to recognize the depth of our wounds. And if you don't recognize the depth of your wounds, or that you're wounded at all, then healing probably won't make a lot of sense. But if we look closer, we'll see. And then with the Healing Circle, I have a T-shirt, and a lot of brothers have it too. It says Men's Healing Circle on the front, and on the back it says, "We are our own medicine." What does that mean? What does that mean? We are our own medicine. So what I gather from that is that the particular concerns that exist with these unique people, we're not going to be able to get the counsel and the direction from anyone except other people that look like you and have your experience, so that we can come together. The way I got clean from using drugs is I got around people that was using drugs and don't want to do it no more. And I got clean. I've been clean for 20-something years because I got around people that I could talk to about my issues, and we can help each other. We had a stick. It was a little phrase. It's called, we are each other's eyes and ears. Because of those practices, I was able to maintain the consciousness of my importance. And once I did that, I maintained the consciousness of what I would risk if I decided to break bad, use drugs, go in the underworld, risk the penitentiary, and then be in the penitentiary creating stuff that I could very well have been creating out here. Because I wrote 2 books while I was in the penitentiary, and a children's book, and some poetry. Find out what my gift was in the penitentiary. So it's very important that we start recognizing that we are wounded people. The only difference, I used to tell people that I recognized, because I was insane. You know, I was insane when I was coming up. My thought process, I was intelligent, and I was an intelligent individual, but I used my intelligence for ruthlessness and checking you for disrespecting me and all that old kind of stuff. So it's starting to get important for us to recognize that the healing part is a very important aspect to our unity. It's sort of like a foundation for our unity. So coming together in these type of events is just a prelude to that. Get familiar with being around each other. Because when you go to these events, trust me, there's no arguments, there's no chaos, there's just black people, brown people, even white people coming in and enjoying the event. Just enjoying being around other people of like mind and like spirit. And that's where we can plant our seed for the healing for our culture. It's coming together on these type of events. These are like, they don't cost you anything. It's unbelievable how you can have an event that doesn't cost anything. But I went downtown last year because I was doing some signatures for ballot measures. As I went downtown on Capitol, they had blocked off a whole 2 blocks, and in the middle, they had vendors selling nothing but alcohol. Alcohol and food. And they had, you had to pay to get in, and people just going there, standing around, sitting around, drinking and eating. And it was thousands, it was like thousands or 1,500 people in there that you had to pay $10 to get in. And here we're talking about some that all you had to do was get there and things will be provided for you. And for some reason, that's not attractive. It's very contrary to me. Is that, okay, let me tell you a story. A guy had a refrigerator that he wanted to take out of his garage. He had brought a brand new one, so he wanted to give it another one. So rather than cart it to the thing or whatever, dump it or whatever, he put it out on his lawn and put a sign on it that said free. Sat there for one day. Sat there for 2 days. Sat there for 3 days. So he decided. He took the free sign down and put for sale on it, and somebody stole it. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about the value of something over the price. Then we had Baxter Atterbury, one of the renowned spokespersons for financial literacy and investment, come to our healing circle, our last healing circle, and shared with us. And one of the things that jumped out was price and value, the difference between those two. So the value of the refrigerator was dictated by the fact that it was said to be valuable by somebody else, not somebody riding down the street seeing it and saying, oh, that has value. The for sale sign gave it value. And so then it became a must-have. So I'm going to steal it. Let's get it on the truck. Hold on, anybody looking? Come on, hurry. Hurry up. Get it on the truck. Theft. Instead of getting it for free. So we're looking at some really in-depth tendencies that exist. I'm not making any of this stuff up. I'm just reporting what I see. And it's very disheartening to see some of the stuff that we're practicing and then wonder why we're not flourishing and thriving. We don't take advantage of the opportunity provided by people like Tim Pool, provided by people like Tom Donaldson at the African Marketplace. Tim mentioned the other day, and I'll attest to it. You can walk in there any given day. You'll be hard-pressed to bump into anybody. That's what he said. You will never bump into anybody. They've had a couple events there where they sponsor for the young people and all that, and the young people, you know, and it's got to be music, it's got to be a beat, and it's got to be all that fun stuff. But serious, serious patronism, that's not happening there. I'm talking about serious, deliberate, like I'm going there, and I'm going there with the idea that before I come up out of there, I'm going to contribute and support this African market. So we miss our opportunity to address these issues, come to a healing atmosphere where it says this is what we do. It's not, there's no duplicity there. They said this is what we do. We seek to heal ourselves through each other here. We seek to do that with the young people as well as adult males, and we're getting ready to start a female, a ladies' healing group because we're wounded. And we need to get humble and honest about that. We are wounded people. So I just kind of always wonder what kind of motivation could get us to contributing to these events. You know, because as I said, I went to the event. I'm going to tell you something. I went to this event at the Robinson Center on Norwood. This is foreign language to a lot of people, listeners in other cities. But let's picture a community center in the inner city, where there's on the periphery there's homelessness, there's hopelessness, but the community center is sort of like that orchid in the middle of a jungle, right? And they sponsored an event that lasted, let me see, from 2 o'clock to about a 4 hour event where they basically were just giving away by raffle a lot of very nice, valuable gifts. Just spreading some love, just sharing, well, whatever warehouse, whatever whatever reserve they had, bicycles and toys and commodities, Christmas trees, they were really pouring into the community for the community to benefit from the center's presence. And I'm going to tell you something. I think it maybe 100 people showed up. Maybe 100 people showed up. Maybe more, but where I was, I'm seeing, because I had a booth there, and I'm seeing the influx of people. And it wasn't a lot of people. And I'm thinking, did they market this thing? And I checked, and the answer is yes. They marketed this thing. Do they have a good, powerful word of mouth? Yes, the answer is yes. They have some people who know many people, who know many people, and so on and so forth. But for some reason, for some strange reason, the support to even that venture was shallow. Now, I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to the mall. There's a mall here called Arden Mall in Sacramento, California. Arden Mall. It's pretty much like every mall. It's got all these different stores. It's got, Macy's and Brighton and a lot of major stores. Got a lot of them. But they got this one store that got more people in it than half the stores in the lane in the mall. You know what that store is? The phone store. Stays packed. I mean, people billowing all out the door. Thicker than a Costco parking lot of people in the phone store. I just don't understand that. I don't understand that. I mean, I have an inkling of understanding, but I don't understand the overall. It's like, this, you paying $800, and all, whatever, ridiculous amount of money for a phone, for the visuals and whatever it does, I don't care. I would have a flip phone, but it doesn't have voice text. If a flip phone had voice text, I would have one, because I don't need all that stuff. But the marketing of the importance of this stuff is so powerful that you have people jumping over where you can mingle, socialize, network for free to be in a phone store to pay $8, $12, $1,500 for a phone. That's where we are. That's where we are. So how do we get from where we are to a more desirable place? As a unit. And when I say unit, I'm talking about a country, because I'm going to say this, and I'm going to say this every day. Equity for black people, putting them in a frame of recognition for what we've contributed to this country, and developing a new way to look at us, it's not just good for us, it's good for this country. It is good for this country, because they interview people in other countries other thriving countries like Germany, China, Japan, and even in the Netherlands, especially the Netherlands, they have an opinion. They say, well, look, you know, y'all system can't be working too well because I see how you cheat your black people. So, you know, don't be touting your system trying to get us to consider your system because your system doesn't work too well because you exclude one of the major elements in your country and you do it so casually that we think that, you know, you're just full of game. No, we don't want to be like that. But we see those people. We see what they've contributed. We see, I'm going to tell you something that somebody said, and I subscribe to it. We are the real patriots in this country. They talk about real patriots, you know, you're a patriot, and, you know, these people, MAGA people, they claim to be patriots, and the people that stormed the Capitol, they claim to be patriot, the other people saying, well, they're patriots being locked up and they're standing for the patriotism in this country. We're the real patriots in this country. We're the patriots. We have fought in wars and have come back and been disrespected. We have fought in wars and come back and our brothers have been hung with their uniform on. Been lynched with their uniforms on. Yet we still stand for what represents the ability to thrive in this country. And when called upon to perform, we do so. So that's how I subscribe to that. We are really, if not the true patriots, patriots, among the truest of patriots in this country. But nonetheless, until we recognize some of the key elements and some of the key factors about who we are and how we can represent, the recognition is not going to come from the outside in. That's true. I hope you can get with that. The recognition of our prowess in so many things is it will be recognized to be capitalized upon, but it won't be recognized to be edified. It won't be recognized to be held up in esteem. It won't be that. It'll be recognized as a continued resource to draw from. And boy, do we have them. I just got through reading off inventions. Now, you want to talk about personalities and talents and genius in fields. We have people in fields that represent genius.
If I may interject one thing, Brother Marvell.
Yes.
If I may.
Well, Mark, identify.
Yeah, this is Mark the disciple. We have identified a lot of things that we have done as a person, but not as a people. That's our problem. There is a lot of black excellence, as you were going on to say, with the actors, the entertainers, the basketball players, and all of them are just entertainers. That's all they are. That they just there to entertain, create a distraction, basically, and also create more division amongst our people. That is our biggest problem, division. We have to understand what black excellence is. We need black cohesion, because with no black cohesion, black excellence ain't nothing but a bunch of black assholes. That's all they are. They get this money, and they separate it. That's what they do to us. They separate us by any means necessary, and we fall for the P again. They hiding the P on us. It's in their hand. But we think we done arrived, and we ain't arrived to nothing, nothing at all. Sure, you can get you a nice car, big house, your kids got all this and that, while our underprivileged kids have nothing. See, so we're taught to look down on each other. We're taught to ride past each other. Instead of coming together, we need black cohesion. We as a people have got to come together and fight the powers that be. See, so we got to stop teaching our kids to get jobs and train our kids in careers and how to work together and build something together. That's the plan. That needs to be the plan, I should say, with reparations. That's a great opportunity to build something together. But without black cohesion, we're just growing further and further apart. So I just had to interject that. And I digress.
Appreciate that. I don't know how long you've been on, but yeah, that was.
I've been on all day,
earlier on.
I just sit back quiet.
Yeah, that was a mentioning because we know our individual. We've demonstrated individual prowess in a host of areas, right? And now that you got me thinking, that is a good reflection of what happens. It's almost like the same when a rapper denounces his people and gets paid, right? The better he is at it, the more famous he becomes, right? And then you have in the other entertainers who acquire wealth. I ain't gonna say wealth. Let's say get rich, because wealth and being wealthy and being rich are two different things. They acquire riches, and they become aloof, you know, almost untouchable. I remember I wrote Steve Harvey. He had a Steve Harvey show a long time ago. Now, Steve Harvey is a Clevelander. Matter of fact, my family went on the Family Feud, right? And he screens them before the show to get a feel for them and know how, you know, how to produce a nice show so he could talk to them. And he knew me from boxing because I used to be a boxer trainer. He said, "Marvell, you know, I know him even in boxing, right?" And said, somehow he remembered the name Marvell. We never met personally or anything like that. But now I wrote him a letter to try to get my mama on his program. Now, I don't know what the process is because I sent the letter several times, a well-written letter. I mean, a heartfelt, well-written letter because I'm a writer. So I made sure that the point was carried well through that literature. What the goal was, I wanted my mama to be acknowledged. And I'm not saying that she qualified just because I thought so, but I never heard anything back in response to my request. So that kind of aloofness, where you got to go through a whole bunch of people, it probably never got to him. Probably went through some screening process, and then they did that, read the letter and put it aside or whatever, waited for the proper, I don't know. But all I'm saying is that when a certain amount of riches has been reached by a lot of our people, that distance is created and perpetuated by the person who has the riches, right? And so that's another form you mentioned. That's another form of division that may not be deliberate, but it's just matter of fact. That now we can't even get in touch with the people that had the wherewithal to assist us. They might do some philanthropic little things and come and give turkeys or something on Thanksgiving, or you know, give some bicycles and trinkets or stuff on Christmas to an organization. But we're not hearing them say or feeling that they have a willingness to say, okay, y'all, let's get together and make something happen so that we don't have to be concerned about us killing each other anymore. Let's get together and address these issues about drug usage in our communities or single parent family situations or lack of acumen about how to seek a vocation rather than education might be extinct by the time you get to be an adult. You studying all these things, and then technology is taking you out of the realm. So now what you studied for 10 years is irrelevant. Let's get to some relevance. Let's start forming these opportunities to build vocations. I don't hear and feel that's a movement. It's sort of like they don't want to expose themselves as being conscious rich black people. They want to do it on the smooth side so that they won't get focused on by the wealthy, because there's a difference. The wealthy people have leverage over pretty much anything that happens in this country. Look at politics. Wealthy people, billionaires, can buy who they want into the legislations. They can buy anybody they want. Wealthy people. Rich people live well. Wealthy people dictate. So maybe they're concerned that they don't want to ruffle the feathers of these type of people. I don't know what the reasoning is, but we're not seeing them coming back and saying, okay, here's a scourge in our communities that everybody can identify. We know we have these young kids. We had a kid sit in our class, 12 years old last week, said, if I got a body, everybody in school would respect me. That's what he said. If I got a body, everybody in school would respect me. So we have this mindset, and then we have drive-by shootings and flat-out shootouts, stuff like that going on, permeating our inner-city communities, and we don't hear nothing from these people. But, hey, man, I'm sick of hearing about that. Yeah, they sound like thoughts and prayers. You know, when the politicians hear about a mass shooting or hear about a tragedy, they say, oh, our thoughts and prayers are with you. No money, no support, no interest beyond the funeral, beyond the photos, the photo op, no real investment of time to create legislation that would help change this, just thoughts and prayers. And so that's kind of like what I see and feel is coming from or not coming from those people who have the wherewithal to pour into situations that exist in our inner cities. Thoughts and prayers. No money. Because money is the lever. No money. Or even use a celebrity to bring attention to it. Get on TV and say, look, say something about it. Don't get on TV and start promoting more products. Getting contracts where you're getting, you know, millions of dollars to put your mouth on, your name on some product so you can get richer. And then when you get your riches, you build a house on the side of the mountain with all the bells and whistles that you hardly ain't never in. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. But ridiculousness is not uncommon in our society now. When you look at it critically, there's so much ridiculous stuff going on that ridiculous looks natural. But not for us. We have to look at stuff level-headedly. We have to be as unemotional and more calculated about any of the things that we're trying to do, and we have to be organized and professional in our presentation. Can't be shabby. Because that professionalism will attract more cultures to our example. They're already attracted to our resource, but they're not attracted to our demonstration as a people, as a efficient machine working together. Haven't seen that part. They've seen everything that we could do, and they come and they say, okay, well, shoot. I don't know how they're getting that money. I don't know where they're getting that money, but they're in the store every day buying Swisher Sweets and what you call them little cigarettes every day. in my store every day, you know, buying all kinds of wham-whams and Zuzu sugar products, you know, that's been sitting here. You know, how you go on a gas station and they got like grocery store products? How long do you think that stuff been sitting there? Because everybody ain't coming in there buying that stuff. That stuff just sitting there and looks great sitting there. But, I mean, check the expiration date on that stuff before you buy it, because how long can that stuff sit there? Ain't nobody, it's not a grocery store, it's a gas station. But they got every kind of product that you can buy. So what's up with that? So if we start looking a little closer, we can come to some more reasonable conclusions about who we are to them and who we are to each other. The who we are to each other is the most important observation. However, we can probably get to that by looking at who we appear to be to each, to others, so that we can start getting insulted. Wait a minute. Really? You say, how much that costs? Who you think? You, really? So I can come to your store and walk over all kinds of debris to get to your store, and you won't even pay nobody to clean it up because you think that I'm coming to your store regardless, right? Well, I'm not coming in your store until you clean it up. And then I'm not buying nothing but certain things out of your store because it's convenient for me. It's walking distance. But I'm not coming in and doing no shopping trying to buy toilet paper and all that other stuff out your store. You got too much stock to be a corner store. You got too much stock to be a gas station. Make me wonder. Let me check the expiration date on this stuff. Wait a minute, man. This say 2022. You trying to sell this? For 22, and this is almost 24. So I'm saying the analysis is going to be important to make, not only for self, but for our surroundings. And I want you to get insulted by some of the stuff that you recognize that is foul, unfair, inequitable. Get salty. If you want to vent your anger structurally on these type of things that exist in our community and do something about it. If you don't want, I mean, pay a little bit more to patronize, do it to cause you salty. Like, I ain't going there no more. I'm going to go down here. I don't know, I've got to pay a dollar more, but I'm sick of you working me. I'm going to go down here and see what happened if I put it in the African market. See what happened there. If something happened there. Because, see, I'm going to tell you something, and I'll say this again. Over and over in Sacramento, California. I have been here since 2009 from Cleveland, Ohio. And what I have observed is that there's only one place that represents blackness in its totality, and that's the African Market on 24th and Florin Road in South Sacramento. That's the only place I've seen. Now, if somebody call in and tell me somewhere else, I'd be glad to patronize and visit. But if you think, look closer, the only one that's representing like that is on 24th and Florin in Sacramento, South Sacramento. And it's kind of shameful that there's only one, and that one doesn't get support. Got the Sojourner Truth Museum in there. You got to see it. I say that's a must. You got to see it. If you come to Sacramento to visit, you got to go there. So you listeners who are from other cities, if you venture to Sacramento, you have to go to the Sojourner Truth Museum. You have to. It's in the script. You have to go. Because the building comes from the recognition. Now, I'm going to tell you something I noticed about our young people and some of our older people, too, is that we require excellence from each other at all times, because you fall short of excellence, you get ridiculed. Because I have youth I tell them, say, look, creativity is your magic. Your magic is that you can make something appear out of your mind. That's magic. Everybody else got a little principle that nobody else knows about, and they exercise and they call it magic, but it's really just a little principle that they can hide and you can't figure it out. But true magic is creativity. So when I have one of them create something, if it's not stellar or if it's not perfect, I pass it around and they're looking and they're like, looking like, oh man, man. Some even laugh like, that's that. And I'm saying, dude, where's yours? Put yours up for scrutiny. Because if you find folly in somebody else's creativity, that means you don't understand creativity. So when you get with understanding creativity, it's magic. And no matter how unattractive it might be to you, it's still magic because it came from them, their mind, something that they manifested from the invisible. So we're hard and critical about each other. Like, oh, look, how you in them shirt? That shirt don't match them shoes. Look at each other with criticism. But we won't look at the surroundings that are in our environment constantly drawing from our communities. We won't look at them with any criticism. Say, dang, dude, you, how much you say you charge? Or what you doing with that? I mean, do you contribute back to the community? You know, I see you driving, you know, ride nice and all that, but, and I ain't begrudging you an opportunity to make a living, but I don't see anything you're doing other than showing up here in the morning and closing out at night that helps our community. Maybe you think you're helping us by selling us confections and cigarettes and all those other little things that you have that people use to even to get high for the synthetics that they sell, you know, masquerade them as something else, but they know that people buy that to smoke it or ingest it to get high for, you know, all these bad habits. You're a purveyor of bad habits. And even when you get your bounty from purveying bad habits, we don't see where you attempt to improve the environment that you're getting it from. Start asking these questions. Start doing a little bit more analysis of the surroundings. Because we can't blame folk for taking advantage of folk who are asleep. Can't blame them. Got to wake. Got the awakening. When the awakening occurs, that's when things change. So we're anticipating and stirring up the spirits of awakening to just look around, look a little closer, and see what works for you and what insults you. And I think you'll see more of what's insulting than you'll see of what's working. Because I'm insulted. I just have a control over my emotions to where I don't allow anger to get in the way of my ability to think through and find solutions to the things that exist that are insulting me. Not in everything. I have my moments, but generally speaking, when I look at my people, I know I have to be level-headed when I approach situations, because if we get caught up into the anger syndrome, then the next thing we know, we made a bad decision and we're doing our best thinking after the bad decision. Let's do our best thinking before the decision. Black inventors. I have the Black Inventions, Extraordinary Inventions, Extraordinary Inventions. Let me read a couple more. I just want to keep on watering this seed about who we are and who we've been to this country. And the reparations proposition is really a matter-of-fact inquiry. It's like, okay, you did them, you know, you did the Japanese, you did the Italian. And in 1860, you did the Homestead Act, where anybody came from other countries. They gave them land. And then later on, they used our ability to harvest to start drawing from the ability to work the land from people who were working the land before they gave it to these foreigners, the Homestead Act.
But right. That was a plan. That was all a plan, brother. I see everything that's been done to us and that we've done to ourselves, it has all been a plan. See, we've been taught to get rich or die trying. Like I say, I bring it right back to the same thing in the beginning. It's about love. We got to learn to love ourselves, and we got to learn that we're nothing alone. Alone, we are nothing except what they want us to be. Just poor people that they can trade, they can use us against ourselves to benefit them. But we don't see that because we think we've arrived. Oh, I ain't working no fields no more. I'm not doing this and that. So what he does is he takes your ability to feed yourself from nature and go in here and work for him just to earn some money so you can look good, you can flow show, you can high side and look down on your people. We got to get back to basics. We got to learn to love one another, or else we're going to continuously destroy ourselves. We're headed for self-destruction daily. You know, we're looking for a great Messiah to come out the skies and make things better. But we got to want better first. God is not going to help those that's not helping themselves to do better. We're just helping ourselves to look better. So others could say, oh, look at him. He got this. He got that. It's not supposed to be that way. That's why it's up to like-minded people to come together, purchase land together, build a community together, something that they cannot touch. Because, see, once we do that, they can't touch us. But we don't have that concept yet. We got that concept, I got to get mine before he get his. Or if I can't get mine, I'm going to take his. You know, we had a lot of great inventors. Invented a lot of stuff. But who did it benefit? Them, not us. See, so we got to think. See, some progress ain't nothing but a mess. We can't make every life be easy. Life is not hard when you till your own soil, grow your own food. You don't have a need for a grocery store. Half the mess in there is killing us any damn way. We don't need that mess. We don't need processed foods. We don't need homogenized milk. We don't need none of that mess in there. What we need is what God gave us, the same way he put us here, the same way he puts up here for us to survive and to thrive. But we don't want to live like that. I'm not suffering. That's not suffering. That's living. Suffering is getting all this mess that you can't pay for, you can't afford. It's going to break down sooner or later. Oh, I can afford me a Rolls Royce. I'm going to get me a Rolls Royce. I heard a brother tell me that the other day. For what? Oh, I can create another business with this. For what? To take more money from your people? And we got to do better. We got to think better. We got to live better. We got to learn to love better. Now, we got to get away from this money mess because money ain't nothing but a pile of mess. Ain't nothing but rubbish, filthy rag. So when we wake up and think about black cohesion, about doing something as a unit, and I don't need no brothers out there speaking black cohesion, but they just lying in their pockets, another scam on brothers and sisters. We got to come together in love, man, to do this thing right. If you believe in God, you want God to be pleased with you, utilize the things that God set here for you and enjoy it. You'll enjoy life much more better. You'll have a peace of mind. There's no debt in it. You ain't got to worry about paying nothing. You got to, and I mean, it's just sad because I hear so much, but I don't see nothing at all. All I see is separation. That's all I see. You're getting separated further and further and further apart. So, I mean, you know, it's just life. And we just got to think better. I digress.
Well, I appreciate that. That to me, that's the, that is the overview. As we, if you're in a position to really be observant, the overview is all those things you mentioned and even more. And well, I'm just a little bit more encouraged by things like this, things like the meetings that I'm attending. I'm going to attend a meeting at noon with Tim, speaking with people who are upwardly mobile in regard to creating a little bit more energy and momentum toward unity. And I met last week with a young lady that has a concept about pooling all businesses to form what I call a consortium of businesses, right? And having a that has a power in itself, and then they have some components in it that once we start generating the type of cohesion and revenue involved, we can pour into each other's business and hope and push them to thrive so that they can in turn push back, give back to the thriving of other businesses. So I'm encouraged that we keep doing what we're doing and ironing out the details. Because see, the overview is not the blueprint. The overview is the identification of what's needed to be done. The blueprint is what we're doing now. We're forming a blueprint from the ground up of what's important to look and prioritize, and what's important to root out, what's important to give attention to, which is the healing and the emotional instability generally of our people, because we're an emotional people, but our emotions are awry as a rule, and anger is like the most drawn from energy that anyone can anticipate coming from us. Anyone can anticipate that you say something wrong to one of us, some anger is going to happen. So learning how to address those issues, learning how to turn those issues from being an energy that works against us to an energy that works for us, that's the blueprinting that we're doing now. So I appreciate the overview, and I appreciate the ideas that come to try to particularize how we're going to address and redress the things that have worked against us. So, you know, and when I hear you say love, I'm really on that, because that's what we're expressing now. But it's not that cuddly, lovey-dovey love. It's that hardcore, hey, get with this because I care about you, love. Get with this because if I don't pull you up, I feel down. If I can't inspire you, I feel less than. If I don't have influence with you and you're making good decisions, then that pulls away on my self-esteem. If I don't have that kind of impact on you, it whittles away at my self-worth. And I start getting hopeless. We don't thrive in anger. We don't thrive in hopelessness. So it's real important for us to particularize in detail the hows that we get to the unity and the love capable of, because there are a whole bunch of particulars and details that if we whittle through them and talk through them and brainstorm, that's what somebody told me the other day, there's a brainstorm, then we'll find ways to carry these messages to all our people that it'll be okay if we work together on this project, if we work together on this verbiage, if we work together on this concept. We just stay with it and see what happens. Stay with this. So it's not a broad stroke, And it's not, it's a step-by-step process, and that's what we're doing. We're finding out what are the first steps to take, and then what is the next step to succeed. Hold on, this man getting ready to do this.
Well, my brother, I understand everything you're saying, and I applaud you and Tim for the meeting that you're about to have today. I hope there is something great to come of it, because I myself would love to attend such meetings and anything that's going to bring forth a better us. I know we're about to run out of time, and I want to encourage everyone to tell someone about this show and encourage other listeners to speak up, because we all have a voice. Let's voice our opinions on certain situations, because we need help. Neither one of us can do it alone, but together we can make a difference.
I'll say, I appreciate that. Let me do this right quick while my bell's reset.
What's that? What's your boy SP, you hear me? I'm holding it down for my dog. Someone's on entertainment, you hear me? If y'all need a real DJ, they know what they doing, you hear me? I let my dog. DJ One gone, you understand me? If you want it done right, you know what I'm saying? I let my run, you hear me? You know what I'm saying? Y'all boys slow down, you hear me? My dog do that gospel thing too, believe that, you hear me? Yeah.
916-534-2543. That's 916-534-2543.
To keep pushing. It is the Wise Words of One Gun Show on Blog Talk Radio with our host, Mr. Marvell Wilson. Marvell?
Yes, sir. And thank you once again, listening audience, for your participation and for your patience with things that may seem a little uncomfortable and maybe a little controversial. But trust that the movement is going to be for the betterment of how we're interpreting ourselves and how we're interpreted by the rest of the world around us, because we are that group of people that has the unique qualities that, like Joe said, have earned the right to be recognized and deserve everything that comes with the recognition. So I want to thank you once again for your audience. Thank Mark for his participation and his input. And thank Tim for the platform and the ability for us to do what we do. And look forward to you guys continuing to participate. Even if you're just a listener, that's participation. Sooner or later, you're going to find your niche, and you're going to find what makes you feel comfortable to pour in to the concepts that we're discussing.
Ashe. Back
so
to
Mark,
you, Tim.
In closing.
Oh, go ahead.
No, Mark, you know, you have a closing remark. Please share it.
Oh, yeah, well, I've already thanked the people.
Wake up, wake up. You've got the power. you got
my people in the East, yo, you got the whistle. Midwest, 30 South, yo, you got a scandal. All my homies in the West, yo, you got the whistle.
Wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up. Wake up.
Catch all the hell.